Hey everyone, welcome back to Citywide Blackout, your home for music, movies, and more. I'm your host, Max Bowen. Now, Boston's Lisa Bello is well known among the city's rap artists, but that wasn't always the case. In this episode, she talks about how she got her start and the many collaborations she's formed over the years. We look at her two newest releases, Overnight Shift and her self-titled album. Both have unique sounds, and we look at the stories behind them, as well as the many folks she's worked with. And my next guest, well, I am very happy today because I get to be joined by one of the biggest names in Boston, R&B artist Lisa Bello joins me. Lisa, welcome to the show. It is so cool to have you here.
I'm so excited, and that intro was awesome.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, there is so much ground to cover here because you have been doing so much over the past year. I want to open by talking about your recently released EP, Overnight Shift. At the time of this recording, it's been out for about a week and a half. I am totally loving it. I want to ask, though, for this one, you worked with June Jissel. And I think that the chemistry between the two of you was phenomenal. But how did you two know each other? And why did you want to work together?
So this is so exciting because this is the first interview I've done after the album. I met him on TikTok. I've never met him in real life. So his inbox was so flooded. He's going to tell everyone we spoke through TikTok because that's the story he's sticking to, but we didn't. I couldn't get a hold of him. So I went to Twitter. I saw that he had 100,000 less followers on there. And I hit him up and was just like, dude, I love your little duets on TikTok. And I just wanted, you know, much respect. And he's like, do you want to do an EP? And I'm like, oh, nice to meet you. Sure. If we can do that via, you know, Zoom and FaceTime, whatever, I'm down. And so the magic started from there. We did it in a month. We did it in middle of February to middle of March. And we were done all through email and text.
Wow.
So cool.
I'm hearing more and more these days about collabs happening through like Instagram, through TikTok, through like Twitter, back and forth. So it's so cool that you were able to connect with this guy that you had respect for and so were to cool. Also work with him too.
I know. You know what the thing is the follow through. Like, I think people don't realize how long I've been in the industry. So I just think everybody's bullshitting me, you know? So I was down to have the conversation with him, but I'm also like, this probably is going to go nowhere. And he sent me 10 beats the same day. Yeah. He said, pick four.
Ready for this. Jeez.
He was ready. And his response was the same. He said, I didn't expect much because I send beats out and there's no follow through. So I'm so excited by the response, the feedback that like, I want to do this with him again. So the chemistry, like you said, I feel like it's there. We haven't even spoken on the phone. I don't even know his personality face to face on Zoom or anything. It's just all been text and voice memos. So we could hear each other's voice, but that's it.
That, you know, 2021 business in the here and now, it's all like text messages and like, yeah, Instagram posts.
That's it. That's the new wave. And I have to live with it. And so I'm soaking it in, even though it aggravates me sometimes, I'm doing it.
Now, you mentioned that you've been in this field for a while. How was it back when you started? If you wanted to like collab with someone, how did you connect with them?
Oh God. To collab back in the day, I mean, I started when I was like 15, right? And the only person I collaborated with was my brother, Louie. But when I got into my 20s, it was either I know someone who knows someone who knows someone. Since I'm from Boston, I'd show up to talent shows and just straight up when someone got off the mic, be like, hey, what's up? You know, do you want to collab? Out-of-state collaborations were not unheard of, but like unless you traveled there, I feel like you couldn't do it. You know, this kid, June, lives in Miami. Little me could never imagine working with someone that lives in, you know, and recording separate parts. So yeah, I think it was easier in the sense of people were out more. So social media wasn't there. It forced us to talk hand over hand, but it was harder to collab with people that were beyond, you know, 20 miles from your house.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I got to say, I would never have the guts to approach someone at random and say, hey, would you like to work together? I could never do that. I'd be like, hello, my name is Max. We work together, please.
No, it's really awkward. And as you're saying it, I'm like, I remember more so, to be honest, and this isn't to be conceited. It's more that I was the hook singer. So rappers were constantly coming to me. I would go to the Middle East, sing one hook. I forget who I'd sing for back, maybe Millie's back in the day. And then I'd just stand in the crowd. And then all these people would come up to me and be like, here's my card. Here's my two-way pager, whatever they were passing out back in the day. So what you're saying is hard. If I ever wanted to get someone in my, yeah, it was weird. Hey, hi, you don't know me, but want to kick into the studio? Yeah, it's bizarre. I appreciate social media for this aspect. I can't lie.
Yeah, I gotta say, it makes things easier for me too, because I'm, if I want to interview someone, I would not really have the guts to approach them and say, hey, can we talk? Especially if it's someone who is kind of a big name, I would prefer to email them.
Yeah, I think it's more professional too. Like, it's hard for me after a gig. I'm an introverted extrovert. So when I sing, I'm this loud personality, but then I want to go home. Like immediately, like I'm, and I don't want people to perceive me as rude, but I like to like sneak out the back door and Irish exit. So when there are people that from media, especially when I was in New York, I remember getting a lot. I appreciated the emails because it's the next day. I can like soak it in. You know what I mean? And I think you've already seen me a bit, and I you don't want to see my after show personality. I'm so tired. I just want my bed. That's real. Sorry.
Hey, I am the same way. I love going to shows. I love like meeting folks and connecting and such. But once it's over, it's like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm not the kind of person who can be up till like 6 a.m. partying. It's like, I know that's like, we're done. Okay. See you later.
Cut. My old personality is gone. I also don't drink. I've never drank in my life. So when people want to go and like have a sip, I'm like, I don't mind that. I'm not like, think that they're, you know, jerks for it, but it's just more, it's not my bag. So get me out of there. I want to watch cartoons.
Me too. That's really cool. When it comes to working with folks, though, what do you look for? What should people be kind of aware of if they're listening to this and say, hey, I want to contact her about doing an album together?
So I'm huge on people being genuine. And I hate this word, but it just describes it. It's like vibes, like good vibes. And you can't always see that through the internet, but what I can see is bad vibes, like cocky personalities and people that I don't see giving back to the community. Not that I'm looking to see who you, you know, if you've helped the homeless in your neighborhood, but there's just a thing that certain people have, like this kid, June. My friend, Chris Staff, he is based out of New York now, but he's from Boston, and I do house music with him. So like, I just will drop some acapellas, and we met over Instagram, and he just seemed like a really good dude. So it's like, it's a hard gauge for me, but overall, I just like people to be genuine. And to be honest, your music that you have, it's got to be top quality. I get approached sometimes by young artists with decent quality, and I feel like I can help them. So I'm like, yes, let's collab. But if you've been in the game and you're just refusing to like up your game, you know, production wise, I just can't get down with that because I take so much pride in my sound.
If you ever say, okay, I'm good enough, I'm going to stop here, that's probably a red flag.
Yes, 100%. Especially if you're an OG like me.
Hey, I get you. I too am from back in the day. I'm from the days before like MySpace and Facebook and anything like that.
The rotary phone still had one in the house when I was in middle school. Yeah.
I used to have everyone's number memorized. Now, none.
None. Actually, I still have my mother and father's and my last three phone numbers. But I can't remember any of my friends. I just know 911. That's about my extent.
And I don't think they appreciate you calling them because you can't remember someone else's number. I don't think they like that.
No, and there's no Yellow Pages number anymore. I don't think so. No, we're old. That's okay.
That's okay.
We're young.
No, you know what? We're seasoned.
Seasoned. I like that. Seasoned or OGs and seasoned. Use
exactly.
That.
Exactly. That's us. Let's go back to Overnight Shift because I love the theme of it where everything was kind of like workplace relationship related. I dug that because I think some of my best friendships came about at work. Whose idea was that?
I love that you just brought that up. So June came up with the idea for the cover to be Overnight Shift, like before we even finalized the songs. And he said, okay, we're working at a grocery store, blah, blah, blah. So we then took that, renamed all the songs. I didn't make songs around that theme, but the song titles we made around it. And part of it was just to kind of take the stigma off of people working a 9-to-5 that are creatives. And I think that if I no longer work a 9-to-5, this is my 9-to-9, whatever, midnight to 12. I was a teacher though. And I feel like even I was ashamed to kind of let people know that I did both. And so I think it's playful, the record that we did, but when people ask, it is nice to say, but also like some of the best work a 9-to-5. They're postmen and they're out here killing it with albums and interviews and stuff, you know? So I guess destigmatize working and being a creative.
Exactly. Because two things, one, living in Boston is insanely expensive, But two, it takes a while to get to the point where your art can actually sustain you. It's not an overnight thing. It is a years and years of work where you're doing the 9 to 5, then you're going home to work on music, or you're going out to play a show or practice with your band. There's a lot to it.
It is a lot. And I commend people. Like, right now my daytime is writing music for other people. So I am still working for the man in some sense of the word, but I still get to be creative. But it took me, you know, 15 plus years to get to this point.
How did it feel for you when you got to the point where you could say, okay, no more job, this is now my job?
It was scary. You know, I'm a single mom, and I decided when I was going to retire from teaching, if this is my job, I need to leave Boston and I need to do this somewhere else so I can fully see. Like, I guess I was worried if I stayed in Boston and started writing and I got bored, that I could like lean on friends and family to support me. And I didn't want to digress. I was like, I want to go full, go hard. So I went to New York with my little man with a writing job. A writing job I was praying would sustain us out there, because it's more expensive than here, to be honest. And it worked. You know, the pandemic has obviously set me back a little bit, but it felt really good to be able to say I did it. Even if I go back to teaching or advocacy, like, I can say that I spent 5 or 6 years going all out in the music industry. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of myself, you know?
As you should be. As you should
be. Thank
you. What brought you back to Boston?
The pandemic. Yeah, I know. So my son and I lived in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. I miss that apartment every day. And when performances stopped, it was fine because I was making my money off of songwriting. But what happened was a lot of people were halting their budgets and they were saying, you know, let's not drop music until we figure out what's happening with the world. So I said, let's not live in New York until we figure out what's happening in the world. So I moved in. My parents happen to have, thankfully, a basement apartment, which the rent is way cheaper than it was in New York. So I moved my son back over the summer, and fortunately, all my New York clients are picking up again, but we have Zoom, so I don't need to be out in the studio with them as of now. So it was kind of a nice glide, and it saved me a lot of money.
Do you think you're going to stick in the Boston area, or you're kind of keeping things open?
I'm keeping things open. However, the pandemic did teach me, like you said earlier, with, you know, me working with a Miami producer. I do feel like you can get anything done from here. It can be your home base and you can travel. So with that being said, I think Boston will be it for a while, with maybe, you know, bi-monthly trips to New York and Atlanta. And I haven't made it back to LA since pre-pandemic. But yeah, I don't know. My friend Keithan, he's the bass player for the musician Her, and he's based in Connecticut. And he was on the Academy Awards the other night, and then he's back with his kids today. So, you know, it can be done. I think I hate people saying you got to move out of Boston to make it. I don't think you do. I just think you have to be flexible to travel.
I also think that the notion that somewhere else is going to be this like magic bullet that will just transform your whole life is complete insanity. Yes,
it is.
You might find that your style or your art is better received somewhere else. That is possible. But I think the notion that, okay, I'm going to New York, like I'm going to move to New York and just make it, is a pipe dream that will probably never happen, because you gotta know what you're doing.
Yeah, it is, because you're starting over. I mean, unless there's nepotism and you've got people pulling you in, you're literally starting at zero. I was a no one in New York, and I loved that. And I worked my way up in clubs and things like that. And now I have all these connections, but you're right. It was not a step into the city and glitter comes everywhere and unicorn. It was more like a homeless man was urinating on the lady. You know, it's just what it was. And I love that because I was prepared, but you're right. A lot of people aren't. They think they're going to go and it's just going to be, you know, you get $1 million in a briefcase and start your life over. I wish.
I'd be a little concerned if I like moved to LA and someone just gave me like the briefcase. I'd be like, okay, what's going on here? What did I just sign up for?
There's probably drugs in there. Don't take it.
Oh, this is not what I thought would happen. Since we're on the subject of Boston, I'd like to talk a bit about your early career, because you've been at this for a while, and I know that Boston was kind of where you like got your beginnings. Your entrance into the music scene, what was that like for you?
I was Louis Bellow's sister. So, you know, I was the sibling of a semi-famous Bostonian. So I'll be honest, it was a sour beginning because it was hard for me to get people to look at me as Lisa Bellow and not Louis' little sister. It wasn't until I started doing, like I was saying, I became the hook queen. I was like, my brother doesn't do rap. let me just go and sing on every single rapper in Boston's hook. And I probably have sung on 300-400 rappers in Boston since my career started. That was really my entrance. I would sing the hooks on their songs, perform at their shows, and then get myself a show at whatever venue they were at. That was pretty much my entrance, I'd say, to the game, where I actually felt like I got started.
Was it really hard to make your mark, getting separated from being Louis Bello's sister? Did that take a long time to happen?
It did. And then, what's it, 2021. All right, so I want to say, I don't know if it was 2012 or 13. I still was a baby in the game. And my brother and I were up against each other for best live vocalist of the year at the Boston Music Awards. And this is so bad, because is it live vocalist or R&B? Whatever. We were up against each other for an award. And we were singing. We were performing that night. He was performing. I was singing with him. And after we got off stage, it was at the hotel that's the old jail. I forget what hotels I called. The one downtown that used to be a jail. And so we're in one of the rooms. We finished performing. They announce it. And I won. That was it. I won. I beat him in my mind. That was what made my mark. And even if it didn't to the outside world, from that day forward, nobody ever called me his sister again. To be honest, there's some days, because he lives mostly in Nashville, where people say, oh, that's Lisa's brother, Louis Bello. And that is like the best feeling in the world.
When that happened, that you beat him, was there a moment like, oh God, I beat my brother?
You know what? He's my mother's favorite son. She only has one. And she cried. And I knew she cried because she felt bad. So yes, in that moment, I looked over at my dad and he was like so excited. And I looked at my mom and she was like devastated, this look on her face. And I was like, oh, damn. Not only did I beat three other incredible artists in the city, I beat my brother. And that's going to be a little bit of a, that's going to sting a little bit. You know, so I did feel bad a little bit. But then all my friends were there and it just, I felt like he had his time and he's still getting his time. But at that moment, I was just in the shadows and that was my breakout, thankfully.
Yeah. And I think you have to do that, even if it means, you know, the temporary awkwardness of like, so, bro, how's it going? Here's my award. Or
I'm going to put this up here. Yeah.
Or maybe it makes like the holidays a bit on the awkward side. But I think it's important to make your mark, just step out and be your own person. But I also want to talk a bit about Boston's music scene, because I know it's got a very diverse one, a very strong hip hop and rap scene. But yeah. I've noticed that it has a hard time getting its place in the spotlight. What was it like for you when you started out? Was it hard to just get shows?
So if I went the R&B realm and included pop in my genre, which I used to have to do, I could get shows. So I remember like the Alchemist in Jamaica Plain, which is now Canary Square or something like that in JP. Okay. Which, fun fact, used to be Triple D's. I was born in Jamaica Plain and my dad used to perform there back in the day. So very cool. I got a residency there, but I remember Lyndon, the owner, I was dressed in my teacher outfit and he didn't say, you know, don't do any of that hip hop, but he did say something like the neighbors are not nice. So we have to make sure that the music that you're playing, you know, stays in like top 40 type stuff. So for me, no, it wasn't hard. But when I used to go and perform with my friends that were rappers, I remember the struggle. It was like anything that had to do with hip hop or they felt like the decibels will get too high, they'd stay away from. Fast forward to now, pandemic aside, we can't really count this time. It's still there. You know, the stigma's still there. My friends that are Black and people of color still struggle to get venues in Boston. The stigma still comes with this whole, you know, I'm quoting, air quote, hip hop crowd or hip hop crew, and that there's going to be fights. And it's like, I've been to more rock shows where people have been bottled and thrown stuff than any hip hop shows I've ever been to. So I feel like the scene's getting better. But I still feel like there needs to be a musical mayor that comes in and kind of teaches these venues etiquette and how these live music, these bands and these rap artists and such can bring them more revenue and kind of more fame and more clout to their clubs instead of the opposite, you know, of violence and other things.
Exactly. I think it's also important too for the venues to be like, to be almost be like ambassadors to say, okay, we will book hip hop shows to not only give them a place to play, but to also end that stigma so everyone else can see, hey guys, it's music, there's no violence, relax.
100%. You said that perfectly. Like if they can kind of get the ball rolling, it would make other clubs do the same thing. Yeah, I think for Boston artists, there's, you know, I'm looking at Twitter the other day and someone said, it's like there's a Boston gatekeeper that stops certain people from getting, you know, past a certain, you know, and the conversation was strong because I just watched it. I didn't participate, but I saw someone saying, the problem is you think there's a gatekeeper and that's what's keeping you down. And then there's the other side saying the problem is you have privilege or money or someone in another state that can elevate you, you know, and that's why there is a gatekeeper. So I do think some of us are our own worst enemies when it comes to this scene where we kind of build our own fence in Boston. But then like you just talked about, there's also realistic ceilings, glass ceilings that some of us can't break because good old Boston hasn't changed its ways.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's the reason why, say, in Atlanta, there is a great hip-hop scene, and it's powerful, and it's there, and it's present. Whereas in Boston, some folks don't even know it exists. Because
at all.
There is a level of, I think, gatekeeping. I think it's also, just going back to the stigma, there's that too. It's been around for so long that I think people just come to accept it. Like, okay, there'll be a shooting, or there'll be a drug deal, or some kind of nonsense.
Yeah. Like the Middle East is the only place we can book for a hip hop show. Like that's like people's mental when they come out. I know young kids will ask me and they'll be like, oh, where do you think I can? And that's my first thought. Oh, the Middle East. And then I'm like, oh my God, there's like so many other places, you know? And like, you're right. They've accepted it in a bad way that this is what it is. It's just not going to be allowed. And I hope that we keep pushing and that doesn't get stuck like that because the talent in the city is unbelievable. I came back to like a new city when I came back over the summer. I'm like, I saw a lot of you online, but God, it's just booming.
Who are you listening to right now?
So Oompa is one of my favorites. I got Oompa on my album at the last hour. My album that I dropped in December, we did a song called Pro Renata and she's just dope. I do like Cliff Notes. He's really dope. He does a lot of cool shows with Mo Pope in them. I love Mo Pope. I'm big kind of on anything that Archetype is producing. Do you know Arc? Yeah. He produces everything. So I feel like whenever, and I follow Arc, I record there, but whenever he's putting people out, I'm like, okay, I'm following them. You know, because again, that's a go-to studio. I put an Instagram post a few months ago that women should have our own meter for clean studios and safe studios, and theirs would be number one. Clean bathroom, friendly, even though everyone's a man in there, like at respect to the fullest. But back to artists, my other one, and I always take her under my wing, is Bia Javier. She's an R&B singer from the North Shore. And she's quiet on the scene, but she's loud in her talent. And I always want to say her name in any space I'm in because she's so incredibly talented. So yeah, those are my people that I'm listening to right now.
Nice.
And Dutch Rebel. Dutch Rebel. We can't not say Dutch.
Oh, you always have to say Dutch Rebel. She is a phenomenal artist. Yeah,
she is. All around, a great person, wonderful person. Yeah, she should have been the first person I said.
Let's talk about the other album, because Lisa Bella, which you released back in December of 2020, this one you actually wrote and produced and made all during the pandemic. Was that always your intent, or was it you were working on it and then the pandemic just kind of hit?
Literally what you just said. I was working on it in 2019, pandemic hit, and to be honest with you, I thought that album wasn't going to see the light of day. At all. You know, come July of 2020, I just kind of hung it up. I was missing two tracks. At that point, I didn't have any more tracks written and I didn't have any more music. And I just said, let's chill. And I've repeated this story before, but I just want to always keep his name in the light. My best friend passed, Justin Waithe, in August of 2020. And before he passed, I was very lucky to spend a week with him. He's a singer also. And he was trying to put an album out and I was literally like encouraging him, but I was kind of like, dude, 2020 sucks. Like, let it go. You know what I mean? Like, don't put it out whenever you put it out. When he passed on August 29th, I mourned. And then a week later, I said, I'm finishing the album because Justin couldn't finish his. That's it. So he's actually an interlude on the album. But what I did was, you know, I reached out to the guys, you know, bottom of my soul. I said, I don't have any more budget. I need you off the strength to help me finish this album. And show that 2020 had something great come out of it. And so we did it. You know, it was released 2 weeks before the new year. And I'm so happy that I put that out.
And the folks you worked with, some really amazing talent. You had mentioned Oompa. Also, Jeff Andy Altogether.
Yeah.
Chalice.
Chalice. Yeah. Chalice. She's an artist in California.
And Ananda Nakira. some amazing folks. How did you know them, and why did you want them to be on the album too?
So Ananda used to sing background vocals for my brother. She's an incredible singer in Boston and a vocal coach. And the song that we did was, as you know, it was a song about 2020 being the worst year of my life. And she's just got this dramatic voice. So I'm like, boom, that was easy. She's a friend. Chalice is somebody I don't know at all. She's a co-writer on my album's Instagram friend. And so he hit her up and basically said, would you want to get on this song? I, again, never met her, never talked to her on the phone. We spoke through IG and she became part of it. And as far as Jeff Andy, he's family. Jeff Andy is an incredible guitarist in Boston. He's worked with everyone from Kanye to Dave Chappelle to John Mayer. Dude is like Topaz Jones. He's like Boston gold, but he's quiet. He's from Brockton. He quietly kills it in the music scene. And Keith and Bassman Foster, the one I talked about who works with her, he has a track on there too. Grammy Award winning. I feel like I have all these beasts on there, but it's quiet. You know, they're humble dudes that are just Boston's own wanting to support me through it, which was dope.
Now, did the shutdown, did this like radically change the course of the album?
Yeah, it made it a little more dramatic at the end. I think I wanted it to be more upbeat, but then what came out of my pen and my voice was a lot different. So yeah, I would say the mood of 2020 guided what the Lisa Bello album ended up sounding like. I didn't even think of that until you just said it. But yeah, it's vastly different than what I had imagined on the board, the dream board, when I first created the idea of it.
Yeah, I kind of noticed, because when I listen to Overnight Shift, that's a very like upbeat, very wonderfully positive album. And Lisa Bello is not depressing at all. It really isn't, but it's a very different tone. It's very powerful. It just kind of reflects the crap show that the last year has been.
It feels like it. I'm glad you said it. It is. It's not super depressing, but it's deep. Whereas this album is like, there's not much to think about. It's like a cool, sometimes when I listen to the Overnight Shift, I think I'm driving in like a drop top in like the 80s. I don't know. You know, it just gives me a cool, like you said, positive vibe. And it's not forced. It's how I feel right now in the times. I feel like it's still kind of 2020 part two, but I'm making the best of it.
I think Overnight Shift is a very Boston album because, like we said earlier, musicians, you know, they have like the 9-to-5s, then they go home and they do their music. That to me really sums up a lot of the artist spirit, because there's that struggle, there's that work, but a lot of them just like love their jobs too. Like their 9-to-5 isn't just what they used to pay the bills. They have fun doing it.
They appreciate. No, you're right. I have a lot of friends that are teachers that are really great artists. My drummer, Jordan, he's an incredible drummer and he teaches the kids all day and he loves it. And I like to have that energy when he gets to the studio. He's not like depressed about it. He's like telling me about what each kid did and how it kind of drives him to work harder. So you're right. It is a very Boston themed album.
Yeah. And I love the cover art for that. Who did the cover art? Because that was phenomenal.
So June did that. If you go to his archive of his albums, the past 6 months, I think he's released an album every month and he's done the art. He's done the art. He does videos. He's just a really cool dude to have stumbled upon through the internet, you know?
Yeah. I love the cover where you're like dragging him to work and he's asleep. I was like,
sleeping on the box.
It's like, it could be such a good, like, a comedy show where like the two of you are in it and you're like, by night musicians, by day, you're working here and the various like antics happen. Just,
oh, that would be awesome. He did a couple of animation shorts. I'll have to email you that. Not taking on like a show, but just they were cool enough that I'm like, man, we could make something out of this because it's funny. I mean, and it's real. That would be a cute comedy show. I should tell him that.
It'd be hilarious. Just like seeing the cover, I'd like, oh man, I love this thing. This is really cool.
Oh, that's dope. Thank you. We got a lot of props on that. That's all him.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Going back to Lisa Bello, the album. Can It Be Over, I think, was the one that stuck with me the most, because I think we were all saying that now. We're all saying, can this please be done? Can we please go back to normal? Can we please have shows again? My question to you, though, is what about the last year was hardest for you?
I think two of the hardest things. I mean, I spoke about losing my friend. I think that was, you know, the hardest. But not being on stage, like I said, I'm an introverted extrovert, okay? But I get my happiness from performing. There's plenty of artists I know that are studio musicians and they put out albums and they would be happy to never perform again. I, in 2019, did about 200 and something shows. Yeah, I was working every night and sometimes two shows on a Saturday and two shows on a Sunday. And when that shut down, I didn't realize how attached I was to the microphone. And I think that, you know, I don't know depression in the clinical sense, but I know that last year I definitely went through depression and I didn't know what it was from. And I finally was able to, I believe in therapy 1,000%. I was finally able to work with my therapist that being on the stage and engaging with people without being in their face, because I'm not a person that likes to go to parties, but I do like to exchange energies on stage, is something that like keeps me alive. And still, you know, I still haven't performed, goodness, I haven't performed in a year ultimately. But my first show was in 2 weeks. So I can't wait to get those endorphins. Oh my God. I'm so excited.
That is so cool. I saw the post. I think it was for a couple shows early this month, one at Fenway Park and then a private event. So how does it feel to finally get this back after a year of just nothing?
So I'll drop the sad bomb, was the private event I had to cancel because I did get COVID.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so I'm 3 weeks out from my diet. Got COVID on my birthday and I'm 3 weeks in recovery. So yeah, that show I had to cancel. Then I had to cancel like on the low because there's a stigma with COVID. I'm like, even though I'm on Instagram, some of you think you've hung out with me. So, you know, then you think you have it. But I sang the day before, which is where I think I got it, Fenway Park. Thanks a lot, Red Sox. but when I got to Fenway, I was so scared. I was like, I'm going to get on a mic. I haven't sang on a mic. I wasn't even doing, you know, Zoom shows for like 3-4 months. And there's no sound check. There's no warm up. You just go out and he says, okay, once they announce the batters, start singing. I'm like, what if I don't remember the words? Oh, no doubt. That was probably one of the scariest moments. You know, I've performed for hundreds of thousands of people. This was only 5,000 people and I was freaking out, but I did it. So now it's done, out the way. And I look forward to this show on May 8th. I'm going to be in Providence on the street. It's going to be outdoors, so very safe. And I get to pick my band and just, I just can't wait. I'm like smiling right now ear to ear because I'm so excited to just exchange energy again with people live.
I've seen that with some other artists where they're announcing, hey guys, we have a show happening, you know, in May or June. And there's such intensity. They're like so happy, like breaking your leg on the shelf for like 6 months and you're finally taking the cast off and you can run again.
Literally. I don't want to digress too much, but I had foot surgery 2 weeks before I dropped my self-titled album in December. So I just got to walking again in March. So I went from foot surgery to COVID. So at this point in my life, everything I'm doing is like, I am so thankful to be walking, to be breathing. Like, so when you talk about their intensity, I feel that times a million, because if people truly knew what the past 6 months were for me, then they'd understand that. Yeah, I feel all of them. I want to go to every live show of all my friends, you know, just to support. We earned this.
Absolutely. I imagine back when this whole thing started, I think a lot of us were thinking, okay, 2 weeks or a month and everything will be done. And then the reality hits that, oh no, this is a long-term deal. What was that like for you and for other artists, you know, when it hit that, yeah, this is a year we're going to be dealing with this?
It was not only scary, but it was one of those things where I think the initial depression for me didn't set in because I was trying to help everyone else out. So my brother and I put on a little concert, like a COVID concert via Zoom. We raised money for artists thinking this will get them through the next 3 weeks. And then, like you said, those 3 weeks turned into months. So I did. It was cool doing the Instagram shows. I actually was okay with that first couple months and I was making tips. It was like a very cool exchange. Reality set in probably in June or July that it was like super real that we weren't getting back to it. So it was scary. I probably was one of the only ones of my friends that didn't give up and say, I got to go do a regular job, quote unquote, because I knew that they're going to need us and the demand will be higher once it returns. And here we are and it is. All of my players are booked. The weddings that they couldn't do last summer, people are getting married on a Tuesday, on a Sunday, like people want the live music. I think we were underappreciated, to be honest. And I think now some people are remembering how much they really do appreciate having live musicians.
Yeah, I'm definitely hoping that there's a feeling of appreciating what you have and not taking it for granted, because I know how much artists struggle to get like a full house so they can make money and so that everyone can like get paid. And I kind of hope that people realize, hey guys, you came so close to losing all of it. Let's appreciate it.
Oh, there's always going to be those some people that don't get it, but you're right. I think more people understand that we got them through the pandemic. I really think we did across the country and beyond. I think music in general, like, I don't know about you, but that's, you know, I shower to music, clean to music. Like, that's just, it's in my life and my friends are the same. And I remember I sang happy birthday to a friend's mother over the internet. It was like a Zoom thing. And I sang it. My guitarist was with me. And I just remember the mom crying. And I knew she was thankful, but it was one of those moments where she's like, I just miss that. And she goes, I haven't been out in years to see live music. And I'm like, well, are you going to go, you know, once it opens up, she said, oh my God, every opportunity. So you're right. I think some people did take it for granted. And now they're going to be out in the street supporting us. I just hope that that stays through.
It's a lesson that I sincerely pray will stick around, because once things go back to totally normal, there's that feeling of going back into the old rut, back into the routines, forgetting everything you learned because, hey, we've got it all back. It'll be here forever.
Yeah.
But we thought that. We thought, hey, this will be here forever. And then, oh,
boom,
it's gone.
No, it's I know. As a teacher, I'm thinking, yeah, like I used to teach the same lessons over and over again, and then they'd forget them after taking it all in. So, yeah, I hope. I mean, I don't know. I think that people will be reminded. When I did, not the Fenway part, I did a show in August. I remember outdoors. It was like one show. And I just remember this one woman like sat next to the speaker and she kept touching the speaker just to feel the vibration. And she wasn't a woman that was hard of hearing, but she just kept touching it because she's like, I don't care how loud this gets. I want it to blast my eardrums. Like, I just want this to be every day of my life. And I say that to say, again, there will be some people, like you say, that will go right back into the ruts, going to the same spots, not seeing live music. But there's going to be new cats out here that are like, I missed out on years of live music and I don't want to miss out again. I should make a commercial for that.
I'd be down with that. Just don't put your ear to the speaker, folks. Okay. That's not a good idea.
Yeah, that was a little awkward, but I mean, good for her. You know, she was having fun. She was a little tipsy too. We didn't add that part.
Yeah. I think when I saw that, I'd be like, oh God, get away.
Yeah, unplug. I don't want to get sued. Thank you very much.
Eardrums take a while to heal, folks, okay?
Yeah.
Protect your ears. Do you think it's going to be hard for you to get back into the routine, though, of doing shows a lot? You know, going from, you know, 60 to 0 to 60 again?
I do. I think stamina. I'm actually working with my vocal coach now on stamina. I mean, partly because I got pneumonia when I had COVID, so my lungs are different, but in general, I've been sitting on my ass for a long time, you know? So I do. I think it's going to be hard. In May, I have, starting the 8th, I have a gig every weekend until July. So I need to figure out a way to get the stamina back that I used to have. So yeah, it's going to be hard, but it will be doable.
What worked for you in the past, especially because you mentioned you had done 200 shows in 1 year?
To be honest, I don't work out like a fitness instructor does. I literally just worked out for lungs. So I don't run. I hate running. Bless anybody who can run outside for fun. That is like, good for you. I can't. I run like 2 feet and I'm bored. So doing the bike and doing the treadmill, walking, let me just let everyone know, walking incline, I cannot for the life of me run. Those things are just direct things that help my lungs. And that's it. And because I was doing shows and putting my son to school the next day, I would then sleep, you know, during the school day. And obviously now they're just starting to open schools up again. I'll do the same. It's almost like being a night shift worker, you know, busting my butt at night, dropping him off at school and sleeping. That's what I'm going to have to get used to again. I got this. I can do this.
Exactly. And speaking of your son, he is also part of the Lisa Bello album. One of the songs?
Yes. His name is on the album, though. He has published all of my music. Cassius Bello Music, he has his own publishing company since he was like 4. And basically anytime I publish a work of art, he gets residuals from it. And it just goes into his mini bank account. And I'm just setting him up, you know, so he's now published probably 25 songs and he's 7 years old.
These entrepreneurs are getting so young these days.
And he has no idea. Like he sees his name on the cover and now it's very cool, but he did Tommy Boy, the last album, this album, and then any singles that I collab on. So yeah, he's got a lot under his belt, which I just think is cool because he may never want to do music, never. But being behind the scenes like this, he can get residuals from things until he's, you know, 100 years old. So I'm just setting him up to possibly want to be in the industry.
Do you ever give him any kind of nudges in that direction?
It's a hard line for me because my father did a lot of nudging when it came to sports and not music, but sometimes it was too much in sports. And I think I translate that to my son where I let him try everything, but I don't really push. The only thing I push in this house is dancing is mandatory when we're mad. If we're mad, we put on a song and we dance. So he loves dancing, but he tells me to be quiet sometimes when I'm singing too loud. So he's not the biggest fan of music when it comes to singing. And he's just started to take a liking to keys. So I'm going to offer him things like lessons and stuff like that, but I just don't want to push. So yeah, light nudge for sure. Not a major push.
We've talked about shows and you had mentioned your first EP, Tommy Boy. And I know that you also did a global tour for this. Yeah. I love hearing show stories. Was this your first time playing like overseas?
It was. It was my first time leaving the country on a plane other than going to Canada. This was like amazing.
Okay. I want to hear all about this one. Where'd you go for this tour?
So I went, I'm going to butcher this. So let me just say I went to four different spots in England. I was in London. I know Hyde Park was one of them because I'm from Hyde Park. And then I went to Milan. But in Milan, it was mostly just studio work and just kind of meeting people that had been Italian fans, because I am Italian. So it was like one of those things where they wanted me to come. But in England, England is like New York, but cleaner. It literally, everyone just looks mad. No disrespect to one of my besties, Chloe, who lives in London, but like everyone just looks mad. My accent was laughed at. And I don't feel like, I have a pretty neutral accent just from taking radio, you know, lessons in college and stuff. But my brother met me there because my brother was doing a tour in, Russia? My brother was somewhere out there. He was on a boat, like a private boat for someone that he was performing for. And he came over and his Boston accent is unbelievable. So like any store we would go into, if people had no idea what we were talking about. And I'm like, I feel like our accents being in New England should be pretty, you know, transferable in London. They're not at all. I was a little bit of a freak show being fully covered in tattoos, and it wasn't in every section of London, but it was a good amount of people that hadn't seen someone as heavily tattooed as me. And I honestly didn't see that many tattooed people, but I don't have any like rager stories. It's funny being a woman artist with an all male band. It's a lot different than when I'm in as the background singer to an all male band, because those are other stories I have. But no, I was treated with super respect. I was supposed to go back for my self-titled album in February, and then we know what hit. I know. I thought you were just going to give the finger to Corona. So I can't wait to go back. Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to go back, but I'm definitely going to do a U.S. tour and start in Hawaii. That's my goal for the fall. So fingers crossed that that goes down. I know. And then we'll go back to Italy and London.
Oh, definitely, definitely. What's on your list of places to definitely visit for shows? Where do you think you'd want to go?
Germany.
I like how quick you were with that.
That's like, as you are saying it, it was just in my mind. I think of how dope they are with underground hip hop scenes and how well they receive American music. I always say this wrong. South Korea, not North Korea. South Korea took a big liking to my Tommy Boy album, and it was put into a K-pop realm for some of the songs. And basically for the past 3 years, I talked to this man, he's Korean, he uses an American name, Rico, and Rico and I talked because he wants me to go there and tour, and now with my three albums. So was that a place that was first on my mind? Not at all. But now that I've researched over the years, I'm like hyped to go. So Germany, South Korea, those are end of 2021 goals.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that South Korea is very like pop culture sensitive. Like, they want to know everything.
Big time. I think that's like what the guy Rico had said was one of my songs on Tommy Boy, and I won't remember what song it is right now. It caught on, and he said the what happens is it catches on. They start using it. It goes through their radio streams. It gets flagged. And then kids are writing in, we need this person to come here. And that's kind of how it works. Cause you're right there. They pick up on a sound or a thing, and they want it in their country as fast as possible because they are, I would say you're right. They are on like the cutting edge of pop, everything pop, especially K-pop. Oh my God. Overwhelmingly. Yeah. That place would be super fun to go to. Now I'm thinking of all my tour places.
If you need a roadie for the show, I volunteer my services.
Oh, awesome. That is so
I will
cool. haul
gear. I will whatever you want me to do just to travel there because I've always wanted to go.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's dope. Listen, we always have slots for people, especially when I kick out half the boys who get lazy. So, yeah, there's room.
Nice. One of the things I got from reading your bio is the accolades. You are a multiple award winner. You mentioned winning the Boston Music Award years back. You've been compared to the likes of Lauryn Hill, Alanis Morissette. I'm curious, what is hearing that kind of stuff and reaching those different milestones do for you when it comes to setting your own career goals?
I cringe when I hear comparisons to famous artists. And I know that may sound strange, but two things. I think it puts me in a box. And then sometimes it makes people think that I said that, like that I said I'm like Lauryn Hill when I, you know, and then maybe people think that I think I'm better than her. So it's just a weird feeling for me. For me, Lauryn Hill is one of my favorite artists. So I'm honored, but it makes me want to work harder so that other people say that their music sounds like mine. You know, I want to be that person that someone else sounds like. When it comes to the accolades, it's a little different. I'm so hyped when I win awards. I just feel like that little thing, that little glass thing or metal thing is like when I played sports. I was, you know, a college athlete and getting an award was such a big deal to me. So I take those with so much pride. Like we won the John Lennon Songwriting Award and we entered it kind of, my roommate Mike Flanagan and I, who had written that song at the time, we entered it kind of jokingly, you know? They said that there were like 100,000 applicants and we're like, yeah, whatever, we're not making this. And then we won it and it was like, oh, this is real. This looks very cool on my resume. They gave us, we won money and then we won a whole studio of equipment. We won an acoustic guitar, which I'm staring at across the way from me, speaker system, mics, like we won all these things. So I don't know. It was just like one of those things paying off for all your hard work.
Being a full-time musician, does that ever stop you? Does he ever wake up some days and realize, wait a minute, this is like my job. This is the thing that I started off doing just for kind of just as like a thing. And now it's what's paying the bills.
This is what's real. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it makes me lazy because I'm my own person. You know, I have to tell myself to get up. If you saw my phone alarm, it's so embarrassing. I have like 60 phone alarms a day just to be like, hey, remember to go write a song. You know, it's not specific, but it's like, don't forget, because I'm honestly watching Gilmore Girls on my computer on Netflix. So it's so boss that I'm doing it. Like obviously little me is screaming inside, but it's interesting to have to run your own show and hold yourself accountable. But I wouldn't trade this shit for the world. I don't want a boss ever again. Never.
How do you do it though? How do you keep yourself motivated when there's no like deadline looming over you? There's no things like that.
I'm a procrastinator. Let's just be very real. So if something is due on Friday, I'm doing it on Friday morning at 5 a.m. It's just how I've always been. Papers, everything. So it's kind of, I have to embarrass myself in order to get stuff done. So having ADHD, I do have to have visuals and things organized everywhere. So I have signs literally, again, thank God no one can see these. I have post-it notes that are like, did you write the song? Like how many times have you checked your phone today? Like what, you know, just holding myself accountable. I don't think that it's for everyone. Sometimes people want to be full-time musicians that aren't motivated and it's hard and this industry will drag you down because they might tell me a song is due in 3 weeks, but in my mind, I'm like, dude's going to call me Monday and ask me where the draft is. So you just have to be prepared, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what is next for you? We talked about the show on May 8th.
Yes.
But what else do you have in the works? I'm really curious.
So on my 9 to 5, I actually have some opportunities with some soap operas with writing music for the soap operas. So that's huge. I dove into the voiceover field in February of last year. So I'm actually getting into commercials and stuff. And I know that's not necessarily music, but for me, it's very exciting because I have this little husky voice that's getting paid to talk for other people's products. Musically, I think I'm going to drop another album in the summer. I'm ready. I'm ready to drop one more album so that when I go on tour, I have 3 albums to lay out to the world. So those are my next 3 big steps.
Okay. I want to ask about the voiceover work. How did you get into doing voiceover?
Yeah, voiceover work is so bizarre. New York casting is how I got into it. I'm not sure how they do it in Boston, but basically New York casting, I paid for it once I moved there, you know, 3 years ago, and they'd ask you to send little reels. I don't know what a reel was, but like I went on my GarageBand and I said diaper commercial themes and all, you know, you just read all these scripts. And from there I was hired. And basically when I moved, those same people off of New York casting just still connect with me. And I do it all in-house. You know, I have the setup like you have with your mic. And I just, a lot of the things I do are like radio infomercials. That's been things I've been hired for a lot. I do DJ drops, but that's like my little side gig. And the funniest thing that I do is I do cheerleading songs. So for major competitions, when they cheer, they can't use licensed music. A lot of times it costs them too much. So they will create a beat, this company, and they'll send it to me. And I have to do my best cheer singing voice. And I do these, like, you know, for lack of a better word, corny little sayings, and they pay a lot of money. So I've learned that, you know, sitting at home and just kind of being proactive and having good relationships with people has got me a lot of jobs with this voice. But I don't know how to get started in Boston. I wish I had advice for listeners because a lot of people ask me, but it's something that I'm going to look into because I would love to work with people on practicing for voiceovers. It's a lot of, it's good money. I won't say a lot, but it's good money.
That's really cool though, that you've been able to kind of branch out and do these other things. Cause I think people assume, okay, musician, that's all you do. But I hear from people who do like voiceover work, who do music therapy, who teach it. How did singing kind of prep you for this kind of field?
I think, to be honest, I think singing and teaching prepped me for that. I think performing in general as a teacher, I always felt like I was on stage, you know? And as a performer, I am always on stage. It gave me the confidence to go into these things. You know, like even the New York casting thing, they can't see my face. And I think that's a huge deal when it comes to voiceover, is like you can be sitting in your pajamas and you can just put your best self and you can delete takes. You know what I mean? So like for me, it was an easy transition to go from performing and studio work to working for people solely based on my speaking voice. I used to get made fun of a lot. You know, I said earlier husky, but I've always had a lower voice. And people would tell me I have a man voice and you do this and that. And the first thing the voiceover guy said is, oh my God, your raspiness is going to get you paid. And I was like, thank you. You just made my whole life from that. Legit.
I could definitely see you doing like voice acting too.
I would love to do that. I need to get deeper into it for that. Yeah. I mean, yes. I want to be like the lady that you call and gives you the phone numbers to different places. And also tells you the disclaimer on your medicine. You know, I want to do all of
it. Hey, it's work, you know, work is work.
The world is moving.
And now I really want to hear the cheer song. I want to try and find that now because like.
I'm going to have to send you it on the low. But you can picture like all in my mind, I'm picturing is like the Mortal Kombat. Because that's what the song sound like.
Oh, wow.
And then in the middle, I'm going, go, go team. Like, it's so bad.
I'm going to take a jump here. I'm going to assume you were not the person in the front row at the pep rallies.
I was not. I was the person probably fist fighting half the cheerleading squad because I was on the football team. So it, you know.
Fair. That's fair.
I just, you know, my niece is going to Louisville for cheerleading. She's an incredible cheerleader, but I absolutely, unfortunately made fun of all of my cheerleading friends and I feel bad and I apologize to all of them now because I was happy that they were participating. But back then they used to make fun of me. So, you know, it to each their own. I made fun of them back.
Exactly. You take no shit from bullies.
No shit. None.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to do a little like a hypothetical kind of thing here. If you could get into voice acting, what would you want to do?
I mean, ideally, I would like to voice a cartoon, obviously. That would be like, you know, I would love to voice a cartoon. And I think I would like to voice cartoons that are teaching lessons to really young kids. Not necessarily like crossover adult teen cartoons, but I kind of like the idea of things that like my son watches in school, which is a lot of lessons being told through these characters. But now that you're saying that, I'd also like to write them. So I would like to get into writing skits for voice acting with cartoons. Maybe June Gissel will make one and we can do it together.
That would be
amazing. Put that in my notes.
Yeah. June can do the animation and also one of the voices.
Yes. And the music. Oh my God. You are, listen, I'll have to give you credit on that. That is, that's a great idea. Put that in my notes.
Yeah. Yeah. You could do a couple different shows. You could do one about like overnight shifts, kind of story in the real world, but you could also do one for the kids to kind of maybe teach them about, you know, like pursuing your dreams, about never giving up.
Oh, I'm going to cry. That's literally, that would be so dope. Like that the 9-to-5 doesn't always look like the 9-to-5 that you maybe see on TV. Hey, put that in my notes. Memory. I'll never remember this. Yeah. Now I get it. All
right. There you go. Now, given that your field is so easily changed, are you always looking for new things to kind of like try out?
Oh yeah. To be honest, part of my job is to be on TikTok. So I'm just looking at, I know, isn't that, it's ridiculous. However, I am like the hippest mom at all my son's PTA meetings. I'm looking at ways that people are recording, how the sounds are changing, because it's not, obviously people aren't buying music like they used to, they're streaming it. But TikTok and using a song in TikTok is like Lil Nas X, as we saw with Old Town Road. People are getting more residuals from that. So I'm always on TikTok looking under the hashtag new music and just kind of seeing ways that people are creating songs, how the sounds have changed, like you said, because it's constantly changing. And even though I'm an OG and people, you know, around me will be like, I can't keep up with the kids. I'm like, yeah, you can. You have to in order to stay in this business. And even though I like to still make, you know, overnight shift, old school R&B, I still want to keep up with everything else. Like you hear June Jissel, he sampled Busta Rhymes the whole time in two or three of the songs. I think it's Organic Produce when he's like, he's saying yeah or something, but he's sampling dudes and you hear so much of that in the Little Yachties and the dudes that are out today, not just sampling, but sampling the OGs. So that's something that we both got from TikTok. So got to stay on your game.
Exactly. Always like learn new things, try new things out. Someday you too may be the hippest mom on TikTok.
There you go. There's the disclaimer. You too could be like me.
Well, Lisa, this has been way too much fun. We'll definitely have to do it again. But before we go, where do folks go to learn more about you? Hit us with a website and the socials.
Okay, so people can go to lisabellomusic.com, and then on every social media site, same thing. Lisa Bello Music on Instagram, Lisa Bello Music on Twitter, and that's B-E-L-L-O like Jello.
And on TikTok?
On TikTok. Okay, this is the sad part. It's Lisa Bello Musica, M-U-S-I-C-A, because my account got hacked and I can't get back into it. So it's just Bello Music, but with an A at the end. Ridiculous. I'm still hip, guys. I'm still hip.
Well, Lisa, once again, thank you so much. This has been an absolute blast.
Thank you. I'll see you back when I have my next album, and maybe we'll go on tour together. You never know.
I'm there.
Thank you, Max.
Hey, what's up? This is your girl, Molly McCoy, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout, your home for the best in music, movies, and a whole lot more.
Okay, everyone, that brings this episode to a close. You can follow the show on Facebook under Citywide Blackout and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. Listen to the show on Podbean, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. To close things out, I've got two songs from Overnight Shift. First up is Back to Work, followed by Temp Service. As always, keep those ears open.
Come on, we gotta go back to work. They're calling us.
Come on, man. Look, man. Hey, hate this job, man.
All great men must have their moments of relaxation.
And the greater the man, the greater the moment.
Will you get this young lady up to the guest room, please? Don't let anybody see her.
No, monsieur.
She came to see
me. I just wanna fall in love with you on a Sunday. Then do it again with somebody else, probably on a Wednesday. Somebody's apple of their eye, my guy, for the night or two. We pretend just like lovers do. I'm saying maybe that's what lovers do, or how they cope with trauma too. Not trying to sound dramatic, it's just how I like to have it. See, I've been through all of the pain, ghosting and sadness. Now I'm trying to love on everybody.
I know that sounds like madness,
but if you don't allow yourself to fully open up, then you take the chances. Like if it's up, then it's stuck, and you stuck. I'm trying to live free like the birds, the ones on the avenue, not the ones you just heard. So if you wanna be my Saturday, Sunday it may be over, but have no fear, 'cause I got love in my heart, but I can only give it to you, 'cause if I fall, that's when it starts to break my heart in two. 'Cause I got love in my heart, but I can only give it to you, 'cause if I fall, that's when it starts to break my,
break my heart in two. It's like
This love is temporary. This love is temporary, only for a minute. So get with it, this love is temporary, baby.